Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 325 for December 27, 2021. We are recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And my name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com. And you should be seeing my screen right now. So I'm going to pull up charts related to what we talk about through today's episode. And of course, as always, we're going to start out with the S&P 500. So today I have arranged for Matt Buckley and Leslie Juflus to join us as our guest today. And the option professor is back as a moderator. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, thanks, David. And thanks, everybody, for being here today. We've got a very big active market as we go into the end of the year. Not a lot of people want to sell and take capital gains, apparently. And there's a big truckload of money coming in. So we'll have to see if this persists. Our guests today are very informed. They're going to give you a great take on what's going on now, but also probably what they think is going on in 2022. So if you guys want to introduce yourself, starting with Leslie, and go from there.
Hi. Well, thank you for inviting me back. This is really always a fun, fun panel to be part of. My name is Leslie Juflus, and I'm the founder of Trading Live Online. I've been in the markets for over 25 years. I use specific pattern recognition along with some other classic technical analysis mixed in with it. And I've been teaching traders for the better part of the 25 years that I've been in the markets. And I trade mostly the S&P 500 myself, a few other stocks, but my expertise is the S&P 500.
Okay, well, we'll get into that very much. And also at the end of the broadcast, some of the different services that you provide. Now we turn over to Matt Buckley, the legendary Top Gun options man. And I haven't talked to him in a while. I'm sure you're doing well down there, Matthew.
You got it, Jim. Good to be working with you again. Leslie, nice to meet you. Hopefully everybody had a great Christmas holiday season. Yeah, man, it's really weird. Yeah, I heard you talk about the travel stocks before we jumped on the air. Man, I live down in Florida, and I got to be honest with you, we are just a world apart from a lot of things that are going on in the rest of the country. I thank God every day I live in Florida. But no, I run what's called Top Gun Options. I've been trading for 31 years, man. I was commissioned an ensign in the Navy in 1991, bought my first mutual fund, man, the USA Aggressive Growth Fund back in the day, and then just kind of taught myself how to trade options. That went so well that I popped up on the radar of one of the largest volatility arbitrage firms in the country, Peak Six Investments, right there in the CBOT, Chicago Board of Trade. I was a managing director of strategy. Also, when I was there, I founded the Options News Network, ONN-TV, kind of the CNBC for options. No offense to anybody up in the great town of Chicago, but I'm a Navy guy, man. I need a beach and warm weather. So got down here to Florida, started Top Gun Options about 11, 12 years ago. And then last year, started my own foundation called the Top Gun Fighter Foundation, where we try to prevent veteran suicide. And got a movie project coming out, man. We are launching the same day as Top Gun Maverick, May 27th. We're launching a movie, a documentary called No Fallen Heroes, about trying to prevent veteran suicide. So looking forward to a great presentation today.
Yeah, and that's a great cause. That's fantastic. With regards to how we start out every week, we start out with the basic question of where did we open today, which was 47.33. I'm looking at SPX, which is the cash. So I'm at 47.33 on SPX. And where do you think we'll be ending between now and Friday? Start out with Les. What do you got here for the rest of the week?
Yeah, it looks to me like most of this week we're going to continue higher. I wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit of a pullback towards the end of this week. I've actually got I don't want to be a wet blanket, but I'm seeing some sell patterns. They may turn out to be some short-term pullbacks, but I am seeing some sell patterns up a bit higher on the S&P 500.
So you think there could be some easing by Friday?
I think so, yeah.
All right, Matt, we're option guys. And what's the first thing we would probably see today that would give us a little bit of a yellow flag? It would be what? The VIX being up on the day while the markets are up. Not normally the best of readings, right?
Jim, what do you got? Jim,
you're the pilot. I'm just the co-pilot here. But I wanted to tell you, turbulence possibly based on that signal, right?
Day one of options school, man. The first page says what? Market up, VIX up, something is up. So, I mean, that's just, it's like tattooed on my forehead. So it's not, you're exactly right. That's our altimeter, folks. So whenever I see the market up and the VIX up, I call that that, especially looking at the S&P 500 today, I call that a hold your nose rally, right? So we're kind of, and never forget, going back to my time in Chicago, no offense to junior people, between now and subtle shameless plug Friday, which is my birthday, or no, Saturday, December 31st, I'm a New Year's Eve baby. No offense to junior people, ain't nobody trading, right? So right. Most of the senior partners, the instant, everybody's either in the Hamptons or they're in, so it's usually a low volume week. So sometimes you do see these, like just look at the S&P 500 for today. It's on a nice gentle climb schedule, which, as Leslie just said, I fully expect to see a little bit lower by the end of the week. And really haven't seen any panicked end of year tax selling. And we also, as the three of us know, that little old term window dressing might be a window dressing week as well, as folks start trying to pack their portfolios with some winners that they didn't have the whole year or the last quarter and try and pool some of their investors. So I agree with Leslie. I'd say a little lower into the closing bell.
Yeah. And the large cap tech obviously is getting a lot of bids. So Tesla is getting on everybody. Everybody's balance sheet and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Well, we've got things behind the curtain. So let's talk about behind the curtain stuff. Leslie, what do you see happening not only in this week, but as we go into the new year, technically, fundamentally, whatever the heck you got going, what do you think is going to be the movers, you know, the generators for the action? Yeah.
Well, I'm a technical trader. I don't usually look at fundamentals. I look at price action. And what I've been seeing the last several weeks is a fairly strong rotation into some of the defensive sectors. And the last week, I was looking at industrials and materials stocks within those sectors, healthcare as well. And there's some rotation into the staples. But I think in January, technology is usually a pretty strong sector in January. It's got a pretty strong track record of being up in January. So it could be that that with this sector rotation, we're still going to see possibly some strength with technology in January. But I do think that we're going to be looking at more of a correction getting into 2022.
Okay, so maybe we start out a little fast and then all of a sudden some reality hits and they've sucked in all the pension plan money and the Johnny Come Lately January money, and then maybe there's nobody behind it.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be something like the hot potato passed around. There's going to be the last person holding the hot potato. The NASDAQ, you know, is, if you've noticed, has not made new highs yet. It looks like it's trying for them, but it's lagging the S&P 500.
Yeah.
The Dow Jones Industrials has not made new highs yet. That also has a bearish sell pattern. If it does get above these last new highs that were made in early November. Same with the NASDAQ. That also has a bearish pattern. And for reference, these patterns are called, they're harmonic type patterns. They're ABCD cell patterns. And also they're called butterfly cell patterns because the ABCD, the A starts down at the low of December. And then the B, it goes A to B with the high of that retracement around the mid December point. Then we had that move to the downside. That would be the C point. And the D is still in progress. And these are usually about equal length moves between the A, B, and C, D. So that would put the D point above that high in November. And whenever you have an A, B, C, D pattern that exceeds a previous swing high, such as the one in November, that makes it a butterfly pattern. And these are sell patterns. So I'm going to be keeping a close eye on it.
Sure, definitely. Matt, before you just give us a little bit of what you're looking at, I wanted to ask you a couple of things because something that came up with me. I was on listening to Bloomberg, and this guy was saying that 40% of America rents and 40% of America doesn't have $1,000 in the bank. And then I was listening to another broadcast that was saying that there was a huge put buyer in BlackRock for the January 28th expiration, 740, 720 put spread, which would indicate a better than 10% drop in the market by the 28th. The Fed meets on the January 25 and 26. Could there be a situation that this inflation that is beating the heck out of those 40% I just mentioned is addressed a little bit more aggressively in January, which would get people who've all bought in with the happy faces here a little bit more like get me out? Or, you know, what do you see about that?
Absolutely warning Will Robinson. I got to tell you, man, I remember March of 2020. I remember when Jerome Hal dropped. It was a Thursday morning. I'll never forget this because I was getting ready to hit enter. It was the weekly Thursday weekly jobless numbers. It was 6 million. And I'm like, oh my God, we're going to implode even further. We're going to do that W, right? We imploded with COVID, had to get back bounced, started to implode again. Jerome Powell jumped in with the biggest financial nuclear bomb in history.
Right.
And then we never looked back. But I got to tell you, man, for the past year, 6 months, I've been screaming to start tapering, to stop pumping equity liquidity in the market, and to raise rates. To stick with the aviation analogies, 2022, folks, we are in the back of the airliner right now. Janet Yellen, Jerome Powell, and even Joe Biden are sitting in the cockpit. They don't know, or they do. The wings are on fire. Everything's on fire. We're in the back screaming, and the Fed is going to try and engineer some sort of rate landing. It's not going to happen. Like I said, I've been doing this for over 3 decades. I've never in my lifetime seen a raging inflation scenario where, and both of you have never in your career, except the financial crisis, did we see the Fed step in and save capitalism. We've never been here before. Is there a possibility that the Fed just greases it on the runway, like landing at O'Hare, you know, and you're like, wow, golf clap? It's not going to happen. I predicted a year ago, I said the sophomore year of Joe Biden's presidency, we'll see a massive bear market, 20% minimum, and a recession. I guarantee it.
The Fed, yeah, and it makes sense because then he's got 2 years to, and he's got 2 years to come out of it.
Exactly.
I mean, they're not going to have a recession in the election year of 2024, so go figure, right?
Yeah, exactly. So Jerome, here's what was interesting. Like, what was it, 3 or 4 weeks ago when Jerome and Janet sat there and said, and at least, you know, Jerome said, we're ditching transitory. We all knew this. For a year, we've all been literally laughing at these press conferences, right? The reporters are like, did you guys kind of think it's about maybe start to maybe ditch transitory? Oh, no, maybe next meeting. And now they're like, holy crap, we're ditching transitory, tapering faster, and we might get a couple interest rate rises. He had an out, right? After the market freaked out when he said that, he had an out a week later at that Fed meeting, right? The out would have been what? Omicron. For the past year, every time Jerome Powell is giving one of his porridge speeches, like, hey, it's crazy, but it's not. It's crazy, but it's not. He ended every speech with, but the virus, right? He always had a put where he could go, hey, if anything goes crazy with the virus, all bets are off. Right. He didn't with the Omicron. He said, nope, we're raising and we're tapering. So that tells me that he's kind of, I think they're absolutely lost control. And I've never been this bearish in my career, man.
Well, especially in the first half of next year. And that would also take a lot of the monkey off his back, because again, if you did correct strike prices, then of course the real estate might cool a little bit, and the consumer spending might cool a little bit, and the demand for oil might cool a little bit. So it could set up a little bit of a breathing room if in the first half of the year things were adjusted either flat or down.
He's got to thread the needle absolutely perfectly. What was interesting though, the last time he spoke, it's the first time in a long time I've heard Jerome Powell say, look, equities. He actually kind of gave a little wink and a nod like, hey, we know we could destroy the stock market and we're probably most likely going to try to avoid that. But I'm telling you, man, I got one hand on the ejection handle for first quarter of this year. You guys both know February is used, you know, January and Q4 earnings, yay, Santa Claus. And then February is usually just a train wreck, most February. So I'm setting up for a February train.
And there's a lot of good news. I mean, people think that the supply chain glitches are going to go away and the GDP growth is not going to slow, and that, you know, the COVID is going to roll right over like South Africa. And so there's a lot of things out there that are being assumed that, you know, that could be different.
There are, you know, for all the bad, I can definitely ramble off some good, but if anything, 2022 is going to be interesting because it's also an election year, right?
Yeah.
So here comes potential gridlock. We just saw, I know everybody's trying to blame Joe Manchin for the failure of Build Back, you know, Better or Broke, depends on your political leaning, but they kind of forget that there was 50 other senators with him. So there's a lot of gridlock in Washington. And you guys know as well as I do that, Biden, even in a moment of clarity about a month ago, kind of admitted, he's like, you know, that last COVID relief package probably boosts inflation a little bit. So, you know, I don't know. I think the market in the next coming months and into next year, you know, the market only cares when it cares, right? They can talk all they want about raising interest rates and we all kind of freak for a second and then just go back to bidding the market higher. When it actually happens, I think the market
is. The one thing that underpins the market now, and it has ever since 2008, is TINA, where the alternative getting out of stocks and going into money market at zero is not very attractive. So obviously, as long that, and that's the game they're playing. You know, you want to leave, you get zero. So that keeps people in the game, you know. But anyway, let's go to the technicals more and get a little bit of an idea. Do you have any, do you use Fibonacci numbers at all, Les, or anything like that?
Well, yes, that is part of my work. I do not rely on Fibonacci numbers, but they are an integral part of the pattern structures of the specific patterns that I use. So in other words, sometimes people say, oh, well, you can just buy a 0.618 retracement. I've never found that to be a good way to trade. It's a good way to identify it as, you know, possibly one component in a number of ways to find support. And if it happens to be there, great. But I do look at especially Fibonacci extension ratios, such as the 1.27, the 1.618, especially in the S&P 500, these ratios recur on a very regular basis. And they are part of these larger sell patterns that I'm seeing.
Now, let's just talk about the here and now. What kind of upside projections could there be on the Fibonacci levels, like the 38, the 61, and whatever else you've got?
Yeah, there's a couple of them right now that I'm looking at with these particular patterns. And sometimes what happens with these patterns is you get a series of them, and they start to show up on several different time frames. So if there's one on the daily, then you may, you know, start to see 60 minute, 15 minute, 5 minute, all the way down to the smallest time frames. Mm-hmm. Right now, the extension that I'm looking at, the Fib 127 ratio, is using the high from, I think it's about November 22nd, down to the low of, I think it's December 3rd. So that swing, we're taking the length of that swing, multiplying it by 1.27, and you add that to the low of the December, and that will give you the projection to the upside. Let's see, that's coming in right around just a little above 4,800.
Yeah.
And so this is also coinciding with the long-term trend lines that have done a beautiful job of finding support and resistance. So that number is coming back into an upper trend line that has been effective for almost 2 years now. So I'm really going to be watching that area, but I have a zone of right around that 4,800. I don't like to use an absolute number, you know, give or take a few points, 4,800 up to about 4,830-ish.
And on a pullback, do you think we could go as low as 4,650, or would you think the 4,700 area might be about it?
Well, there is support down around just below 4,700. There's an area of support that occurs because there was a bit of a gap to the upside. Just this last week, we have a gap at, I think it's right around 4,690-ish. And so this is the last gap here before we started up to make these new highs. And so if you think about just the psychology of that, no more buyers coming into the market at that point. And if it's a short, you know, for them, if they're, you know, holding for intermediate to longer term, that's it, and the price comes down and just takes that out, then I think we're going to start seeing lower prices from there if that gap support does not hold.
Now, we're seeing some things like retail, XRT lagging. We're seeing Amazon is definitely lagging.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're seeing a lot of defensives like healthcare and the big cap tech is viewed as defensive. And then we're looking at the staples and utilities and stuff like that. A lot of money flowing that way, which is indicating a little bit that there is a little lack of confidence going into the new year with some areas. Do you follow different sectors like that, or are you looking a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I sure do. Yeah, I do. As I mentioned at the start of this program, I've been seeing, you know, rotation into those sectors. And I think industrials and materials are interesting because I think to get out of this supply chain problem that, you know, these are the big companies that are going to be making stuff to get us out. So I think it's worth watching some of the stronger stocks within those sectors. But Amazon has been weak. That's something I've been following that has bearish patterns all the way back to last summer. Mm-hmm. It had a big ABCD sell pattern right around that 30 770-ish area. Mm-hmm. And then it did a little correction, made another big sell pattern, testing, retesting that. And it just can't seem to get out of its own way. It's still looking weak to me. I used the RSI with a method that actually Constance Brown did a lot of work with this, where you can identify the ranges shifting from bullish to bearish and bearish to bullish. And Amazon on the daily charts has the RSI shifting from bullish to bearish.
I got you. Now, this is a very interesting point I'm going to throw by you, Wiz. TLT. I have been bullish on TLT since March. And my thesis has been 175 is the top. And I don't care what you throw at it. Kitchen sink, inflation's coming back. The world's going nuts. We ain't taking out 175. And when we do, then I'll change my tune. But right now, the stuff I have, I actually have yields declining in the 10 and the 20 year. And mm-hmm. I think that might be the case because of things you just brought up. A is mm-hmm. they're going to fight inflation. They're going to fight it with the 2 year. And that means the 2 year is going to jump. And that means the yield sure. curve isn't going to, it's going to invert possibly. And if it mm-hmm. does invert, that definitely goes up your alley mm-hmm. that we're going to have a slowdown slash maybe even a temporary recession or something. So correct. That's the way the cards are looking as far as the numbers, the trends are. It's showing me TLT is actually in a declining yield environment.
Yep.
And if the Fed fights inflation, they don't fight it with the 20 year, they fight it with the 2 year.
Closer alligator to the boat. That's exactly right. So if page one of options training is market up, VIX up, something's up, the second page is, you know, when interest rates are high, stocks will die. When interest rates are low, stocks will grow. So I think you nailed that. Well, and I always put a little asterisk at the end of that little whizism or Wall Streetism, except for financials, right? The financials. But
they're not moving as much as they should. In fact, JP Morgan and Goldman yeah. Sachs are way off. So obviously mm-hmm. somebody's believing what we're talking about.
That's exactly right. Imagine that. Yeah, Goldman Sachs, all the financials have kind of been stuck in a right. You would think with a rising interest rate environment, these financials would start to get airborne. But I got to be honest with you, man. This isn't our 2000s 2010-ish stock market, right? It's interesting because correlation's dead. Unless you're talking like airlines up, oil down, oil up, airlines down. Right. Kind of your basic stuff. But I got to be honest with you, man. There are some days or tranches of weeks where everything either is up or down, right? Well, run the crypto. Oh, wait, it's imploding with the rest of the market. So it's weird that a lot of the, I keep telling everybody, this is not your father and mother's stock market. At the height of this pandemic, I'm looking at it right now. It's almost bare. In my office, I had tons of books, Macmillan on options, you name it, every yeah. book. I swear to God, I didn't take a picture, but trust me, at the height of the pandemic, I took it to the recycling bins, like two recycling bins full of trading books because everything's broken. It's over with. This again is not normal. We are Star Trek right now. We are boldly going where nobody's gone before. But some of the stuff that Leslie does with either the Fibonacci or taking a look at the swings and everything like that, that'll always be that and consistent. But I got to tell you, man, whether it's treasuries or oil or Bitcoin or whatever, things aren't moving quote unquote the way they should be moving, right? So another maybe page three of that options trading book is trade the market you have, not right. the one you want. Right. So, yeah. I mean,
and that money supply jumping 35% obviously is the culprit because, you add a 35% reserves into any system, that system is flooded.
Correct. No, and guess what? If I tried to pump an extra 35% in the hydraulic system of my aircraft, it would blow a line. Yeah. And I think we're going to blow a line here. I think Jerome Powell really is. I mean, it's interesting because, these guys and gals, they don't drive their own, they're in the back of a town car. They ain't doing their own shopping. We're sitting here knowing inflation is raging and everything like that. And they're kind of giving us this let them eat cake. But the fact that Jerome, the past two times that we saw him was pretty damn serious. And he wasn't kind of kidding, joking, maybe transitory, he was not playing a word game. It's coming, folks. A reckoning is coming. And I think it's sooner rather than later.
Yeah, because this is a whole new environment where reserves are going to be taken away.
Correct. So flooding.
This is like a drunk's party. And all of a sudden you're putting O'Doul's in there instead of beer.
And once they find out, they get pretty pissed off too.
Yeah. No, they start scratching their arm.
Yeah. So once, when, not if he takes his punch bowl away, he almost, and it was interesting to see where he threaded the needle with that one question. I think it was Steve Leisman from CNBC. He's like, is there a situation where you could actually be tapering and raising interest rates? And that man hemmed and hawed and danced on that carpet. And I was like, oh boy. So if we get a double whammy, man, out of the, I know the Fed likes to telegraph. I don't know if John Hilzenrath is at the Wall Street Journal anymore, but I used to call that guy the Fed whisperer, right? A couple days before a Fed meeting, it was really weird how John, you know, Hilzenrath kind of knew what they were going to say. We're not idiots. If the Fed's going to do something big, they're going to telegraph. They're going to float a trial balloon and maybe get some stuff out. But ladies and gentlemen, if we get a kind of a telegraph of, well, we heard they might taper and maybe crank an interest rate increase at the same time, I'm telling you, man, it's look out below. And remember, for all the folks that are in ETFs, remember, for every seller, there's a buyer until there isn't. If you really, really want to get out of some, especially some of these illiquid ETFs, there ain't going to be any buyers, man. And here's what's interesting is I went to Chicago a couple of years ago to see some of my old partners, and I'm dating myself, of course, but looking out, I was like, dude, what's your biggest threat? He's like, none of these people in this room, except kind of the senior leadership, has seen a down market, like a no kidding, holy crap. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, man, a lot of these young people in the basement on the Robinhood apps trading GameStop, they're going to get a phone call at 2:30 and they're going to be like, who is calling me from this unknown number? And it's going to be a margin call. So yeah. I love being wrong. I make these type of predictions. And if they are false, I end up buying everybody a bottle of Camus because I'm happy that didn't happen.
Yeah. A bottle of what? What did you say? Because I want to write that
Camus.
Down.
Camus. Exactly.
Okay. I'm saying you're going to be wrong, but I just want to make sure I get my bottle of whatever.
You got it, Leslie.
All right, Leslie, let's switch over to a couple of sectors that, you know, people are, you know, in the know, sound like they're pretty keen on. Let's start with energy, like XLE. Could you go and look at different things, you know, sometimes like that, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So let's go over some of the stuff that seems like it's got the bright future, according to some of the men in the know. XLE. Well, and if we take a look at that, can we get that chart up there? XLE.
I'm looking at it on my screen too. Uh-huh. It's having a little corrective move from a 618 retracement. It's got to exceed these those highs from late early November to really get going again. It looks to me like it might just be doing some ranging in here for now. But okay. I think the ones that I mentioned, healthcare, XLV, XLI.
Yeah, let's go to XLV then. So XLV. As far as energy is concerned, it's still a little bit needs to prove itself a little bit more.
Yeah,
this one obviously is on its way.
And XLV, I had talked about this a few weeks ago, just before it started this last up move. And money seems to be going into healthcare and the industrials, XLI.
How about this one, IHI? That is medical devices. I picked that up the other day. It looks like it's got a bright future because, you know, all these surgeries that have been put off, at some point, they're going to want to get those knees done and those hips done, right?
You would think, yeah. You would think.
I mean, how long do you want to be having your knee with arthritis in it? You know what I mean? At some point, you're going to say, COVID or not, get that darn thing in there. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, again, you know, it's testing that recent, that last high there, and if it exceeds the high from last September there, I would put out a Fibonacci extension of a 127 and 1618 and use that for a target.
Yeah. It just, you know, I keep an eye on everything. And, you know, within the genre, you know, there's different stocks, you know what I mean? And,
yeah, absolutely.
What about the area of like the fangs? Do you think something like SPYG, which has like 50% fang, would be a decent hold if you wanted to have exposure there?
Well, again, it looks, that's not something that I followed, but just looking at the chart that you have up, it's showing a nice strong move. It looks like it might be getting a closing high above the November, but I will say that with an extension put onto that high from November down to that low and up, it does look like a butterfly cell pattern forming.
I got you. And can you just explain butterfly cell pattern? Because not everybody knows what
that
means.
Okay, let's walk through it. If you can use a pointer and go to the high in November, back up to that November high.
Yeah, like 73 and change.
Right, nope, over left, go left.
Left, go left.
All the way over, yeah. About November 15-ish. Yeah. Right there. So that's the high. That's what we call the X point of that pattern. And then down to the low, that next low right there, that starts the A point of the ABCD portion. So the next leg, the B leg, vague, is that retracement high. It does not exceed the November high. Yep, there you go. So that would be the A to B leg. And then the B to C leg comes back down right there. There you go. You got it. And now the A to B leg, that's the first length that we're working with. The C to D leg, so that would be the star to C, right where you've got your cursor. Mm-hmm. Now we're looking at the D leg forming there. Generally, the AB leg is about equal in length. However, about 60% of the time, that CD leg extends and is longer than that AB length by usually 1.27 or 1.618. So now if we go back and we look at that high from November, the high to the low of December, mm-hmm. and we do a Fibonacci extension of that up to the 1.27, 1.618, it's probably going to coincide where that D portion is going to come into when it completes.
So do you have a kind of target price on the upside where it might complete?
Well, hey, give me just a second. Hang on.
I'll give you 2 seconds. I'm a generous man. I'll give you 3 seconds.
Yeah. Who could
Hey, Wiz, you're going to give her four? You're a, guy. You're a good guy.
Sounds like we're making a market.
Hang on, just give me, okay, can I have 10 seconds?
I'm not too familiar with this stuff, Wiz. Is this a little bit of a new
angle?
Well,
there's a book actually called Trade What You See, Not What You Believe, just what Matthew was talking about. Yeah. And this is a book that I co-authored with Larry Pesavento. Okay. Actually, back in 2007, back when we had some pretty volatile markets back there, but that explains these patterns. So I'm going to give you where the Fib extension comes in. Sure. So I'm taking the November high down to the, looks like, beginning of December low, the 1.27 of that swing. So that's taking the length of that swing, multiplying by 1.27, adding to the low of December 3rd, projecting up, comes in about 74.84, and the 1.618 extension, 76.5. So those would be the areas I would be watching.
So if it blows off a little bit in January, those could be a couple of places to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I would be watching some momentum indicators, you know, to see.
Well, this thing is at 60 on the RSI. And I think this one lady, Seema or somebody who hangs around with Norm Hallett, thinks if it gets above 60, sometimes you get into the acceleration phase. So if we can get that RSI above 60 and this thing gets going a little bit, maybe that 76 number is not off the chart. Huh?
I actually think the thing to watch on that RSI is you see that low from December 21st, beginning of December 21st, that's holding a bullish range on the RSI right around just above the 40-ish area. And if the RSI is not able to get above like 65 on this move to the upside, turns back down and breaks that support, that is probably changing from a bullish to a bearish range.
Sure. All right. Well, we just covered energy, healthcare, and then the FANG stocks, which seem to be where money is flowing. Wiz, do you have any areas that you're seeing that you either think are on the verge or, you know, could get a pretty good pop?
Leslie did a great job covering Amazon a little while ago, and she's right. If you look at the left side of the chart for the past year, Amazon has done nothing. Well, it's done a lot. It's swung up and
it's
down.
Right.
It's in a range.
It's been in a great range. If if you're an Amazon investor, the past year sucked. If you trade Amazon like I do, it's been a blast. Now, having said that, if you look at a 2 to 5 year chart of Amazon, it usually does a rip your face off rally, hover for a year, rip your face off rally, hover for a year. So there's with the FANGs or the GAMMAs, I guess they're called now with Meta, Facebook going to Meta. I could not be more bullish on Amazon. I got to be honest with you. It's not, and I'm a little stunned right now. It's not seeing its traditional Santa Claus rally. And Amazon is in everything. We have a service called Trading the Death Star where we just trade Amazon. Amazon Pharma, AWS, Amazon Air is getting ready to bypass FedEx and UPS. I mean, just every area that Amazon gets into, they literally take it over. Right. Now, every once in a while, you get a little poke from Uncle Sam about, you know, FTC this or whatever. But I'm old enough to remember Standard Oil, Microsoft, AT&T. You know, when Uncle Sam starts poking around, it takes anywhere from 5, 10, on the outside, 15 years. And it's a little late with Amazon. If they decided to, well, you need to break this thing up. It's like Mercury. They probably create 12 individual monopolies instead of just big Amazon. So my favorite FANG right now, since it is underperforming and kind of been range bound, is Amazon. And I'm not a big Jim Cramer fan, but he really nailed it a week and a half ago. He's like, well, if this Omicron thing is big and we are going to start doing all the crap we did for the past year and a half, Amazon should wake up again and start outperforming it. If we're all going to get locked up again and have an order online and this, that, and the other thing, then I like Amazon. But it's you know, everybody else in that gamma group is big. Microsoft's insane. Apple's insane.
Right.
And that, I use that acronym, MA. I say, you know, when in doubt, run to your mother, run to MA, M-A-A, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon. So, you know, money goes somewhere. Even if I'm right about Joe Biden's sophomore year and we get some sort of recession and bear market, both of you know that fund managers, institutional investors don't get paid to sit in cash. Money's got to, you know, money's got to go somewhere. And when in doubt, run to MA. So I like Microsoft, Apple, and Amazon here. Mainly Amazon, just because it's underperforming those other two.
And Amazon's earnings come out around the 1st of February. So it might give you 30 days to, or maybe 2 weeks or so. And then as we get closer to that date, they might start bidding it up, eh?
Correct. So that's usually what happens. You usually see like an end of December, you know, 1 to 2 week climb out of Amazon into earnings. And then even most of the time, even when they're blowout, you know as well as I do, what do? Buy the rumor, sell the news. So if you see a strong run in January into Amazon earnings, be careful for a potential sell the news. I love, you know, teaching retail investors this stuff. It's one of the reasons they hate Wall Street, right? A lot of people like, well, I'm bullish. Amazon's going to have great earnings. And then they do, and the stock goes down. I'm like, man, you got to pay attention. You know, buy the rumor, sell the news is another Wall Streetism. You have to
get it. Still trades at a pretty healthy PE ratio though, doesn't it? I noticed every time it got well above 100, it was definitely a sell. And when it got into the 60, 70, it used to be a decent buy, right?
You know what's funny? Right now, I'm looking at my Power E-Trade platform and it says PE 66.9.
Yeah.
I'm old enough to remember when there wasn't a decimal point. I remember talking to Pete and John Najarian when this was Trade Monster. And I'm like, dude, what's the PE of Amazon was like 3,000 at one point or something like that. They didn't have enough zeros.
Right.
So
if
you look at old Amazon, I guess we're back to a relatively quote normal PE because it literally was at one point like in the thousands of PE. But remember, Jeff Bezos is crazy like a fox, right? The dude, when I look at Amazon sales and cash flow and all sorts of stuff, it's insane. And then when you look at the bottom line, it's almost flat, it's income. And people are like, if you had blindfolded me and if you took Amazon off the top of that chart and said, would you invest in this company? I'd go, no, I'd short it. Well, guess what? And Jeff Bezos is like, if I make a dollar, I failed. And here's what he means. He's like, I needed to have taken that dollar and bought a competitor, put somebody out of business, buy a new airplane. He takes every penny that he makes and puts it back into the company, right? So it's funny because Democrats hate the guy because they're like, we're going to destroy you by paying. He's like, and you look at the math, you look at the charts.
There is no tax liability.
Yeah, they don't make any money. And then the Democrats go, oh my God, that's insane. It's like, well, he's not an idiot. And he's the same guy who's like, I'm never going to split the stock and I'm also never going to pay a dividend. I'm going to do something with this money. So I think out of the Ma's or the Gammas, that's the one it's binary. Either one thing's going to happen. It's either going to get airborne and become truly the Death Star. It's going to implode, to Leslie's point. It's just been moving sideways for too long. It needs to either wake up or take over the universe.
Yeah, it seems like it's forever. In a critical, Leslie, would you say it's in a little critical zone here because the RSI is obviously a little weaker here. And if it broke 3,300, there could be an awful lot of people who want to come out. What do you think about that?
Well, I think Matthew said, it's in a big range right now. The lower end of this range is just below 29, just below 2,900. Mm-hmm. And so unless, you know, you have the lows of that range decisively break, and there's taking the swing low from about beginning of October up to the high middle of November, doing the 127 extension from that swing brings it down to about 2,982. And that might be a good buy area if it gets down that far. That's at the lower end of that range. Your risk is going to be the smallest right there. But right now, no, I don't think it's in a critical place because it's right about in the center of the range.
Okay.
But
a lot of green bars there. Is that a positive, I guess?
Well, I think that what I'm seeing, I like to use the center of ranges a lot because I get a lot of information out of the center, watching the center of ranges. If you notice and you draw a line line through the center of that range, right where these recent lows were, is right around the center of that range. So that means that this is a price area that is continually being tested. Now, it may come down a little bit below it, may come back up above it, but eventually you're going to see some type of momentum either to the upside or the downside from that price area. And sometimes it gives you an early jump on the direction.
One quick one for you, Leslie, on the in the medical area, IBB and XBI, they're fairly low, but maybe if the virus is going to become less of a problem and Pfizer's got the pill to treat it and it's going to be a less dangerous situation, would it possibly mean, well, this is fundamental, so it wouldn't be yours, but it could be one of the reasons it's down is people are betting that the virus is going to really get a lot quieter and a lot less dangerous, so biotech won't be as exciting. But there are those who think that if this biotech got moving, there could be value here. But what do you see technically on this thing? Way too early?
It's still in a bearish, it's in a bearish range still. Yeah. And so, and unless it gets, it's still in a big range. It's just a little bit below the center of its range right now from what I see. Mm-hmm. And if that RSI oscillates to the downside with the price, let's say price gets below, it's talking hypothetically now of some things that you can watch for that might give you some early clues as to the direction. So price gets below that 140.37 from early December, that the RSI is starting to make, or some other oscillator that you use, I like the RSI, starts to make some type of bullish divergence, then where these RSI peaks are right now, the one peak from early November, the current peak in RSI, and even back to September, which if this moves to the upside, that RSI has got to break those peaks in order to confirm that movement. And that's going to be a shift from bearish to bullish range. Mm-hmm. And you should get a more sustained move from it. However, while it's still below these peaks, it's still on the bearish side and it's just still, fluttering around testing these low prices.
All right, Wiz, before we run out of time, I got to know what you think of stores of value. And of course, one store of value you like is physical owning of the metal and put it in your safe and hopefully you don't ever use it. And then the second thing is your Bitcoin and Ethereum. So let's go over Bitcoin, Ethereum, and the price of gold and hear what your take is on it at this point.
What's funny is I rarely look at the price of gold. It is one of those break glass in case of emergencies. Or actually open safe in case of emergency.
Because
owning the physical stuff, it's almost, because I'm sitting here in my office with my screens and trading, I have physical stuff on the screens, or I guess they're not physical, but gold actually. It's a different mindset for me.
Yeah.
Randomly, when I do hear in the media, just in my normal daily brief, like, oh, gold's getting hammered or something, I'll go buy some more, which is interesting, man. At least down here in Florida, getting the physical stuff is getting harder and harder and harder. It's a little, not that I'm a drug dealer, but it's almost like, well, I get, you got to talk to this buddy and meet him in a park. It's a little creepy down here in Florida, like to get physical gold. Something's going on. Yeah. So the physical gold stuff, I just kind of, I just forget about every once in a while. But the crypto, man, it's interesting. Bitcoin's finally coming back to life a little bit. It did make a round trip lately. And it's interesting, man. I'm a little bit of, I'm in it because everybody else is in it type of thing, because I got to be honest, years ago when my buddies Bitcoin was a penny type of thing, I had one of my buddies, he's a JetBlue captain, like, oh, I'll buy a ton of this. And, he did the whole crypto and wallet to wallet and Uncle Sam doesn't know about it. And I'm like, hold on a second. What did you just say? He's like, well, we get these wallet to wallets and Uncle Sam. I'm like, you just saying that Uncle Sam doesn't know about it is absolute insanity. They will eventually. The fact, I got to be in it a little bit because it's a hot asset class, but I got to be honest with you, man. First of all, it's not a currency. I mean, I think we've all kind of agreed that, things that swing, 20% in a day or 50 or whatever, you know, just can't be used as a currency. I mean, hell, you look at the dollar, what's it go out like 9 decimal points? So you want something that's pretty stable. But I got to tell you, man, I'm always, as a fighter pilot, as an options trader, I am always, you know, we always plan for the worst, right? If you walked out on the flight deck of the aircraft carrier and said, I'm the best pilot in the world, that's the day you get shot down and die. We're always looking at the worst case scenario. So, you know, I it's accepted. It's kind of becoming more commonplace, but I still got to be honest with you, in a battle between central governments and central banks and a made up quote store of value, I'm always got one eye on getting out of all this stuff. If something bad happens, I get it that, you know, China every other day bans it and unbans it, and India the same thing, but I'm a little leery about all this stuff, man. You know,
what about the Ethereum ETHE with regards to it's being used more with, you know, commerce, and also it's going green with not using the coal to make it. So is that a little different story?
I like that better than the Bitcoin because, the mining issues. I mean, it's insane to me, you know, to mine one Bitcoin, it takes like a small nuclear explosion. That's going to be dangerous. I mean, the Democrats in DC and the Greta's running around the world, when they really, really, really find out about what it takes to do this stuff, they're going to go nuts. So I've actually paired some of the bit to move over to ETH because I think it's a little safer. But again, safe's a relative word, right? I think the world of Jamie Dimon. Jamie Dimon a month ago took a flamethrower to crypto, but standard Jamie Dimon, he's like, we're going to trade it and, you know, we're going to, you know, but I think it's just worth nothing. So, and you know, like the Charlie Mungers, I get this, your typical old white man yelling at stuff they don't understand, but these dudes ain't that stupid. So I'm threading the needle, man, but between them, you know?
Well, Leslie, let's throw the gold chart up there and you give us the technical picture, because my feeling is we're on the precipice of either 1800 turns into 1600 or 1800 is going to be going up towards 1900 or something.
Exactly.
Yep. So, I mean, give us an idea of what you're seeing. It looks to me like the RSI is creeping.
RSI is looking bullish. You can see that there was down at about mid-December. Looks like a nice RSI divergence there. And it's coming up into, you know, more of a bullish zone with this move. Now, generally what the RSI tends to do when it comes back up into a bullish zone is that it will do a little pullback. It'll kind of like fool everybody because most people use the RSI as an overbought, oversold. I do not use it that way. I don't use any oscillator that way because they've never been able to figure out how that works. But if you can learn to use this this indicator, understand the bullish and bearish ranges of it, this RSI is extremely effective for that. And it really can position you into some larger moves. So it looks like it's coming into a bullish area. It might do a little bit testing up here, a little bit higher. I would watch for a pullback in it with the price and kind of monitor how that, for me, I would be looking for specific buy patterns, but monitor how the price holds with that. And it's broken a trend line. We've got sort of a big range. So it's got to get above that last high there. You can see some big selling came in late November. Price often tests, you see that long candle there in November? Price often tests about the center of long candles like that. Sure. So I wouldn't be surprised to see price come up about that area. And then I would expect a little bit of a pullback. And from there, if it continues higher, it's likely to get a larger move, maybe even retesting those May highs.
And what about Newmont Mining, NEM? Because people who don't want to buy physical coins, they want to buy a miner who makes the stuff at $1,000 an ounce out of the ground. And this thing was paying 3.5-4%. So you're getting paid 3.5-4% while you watch a movie.
Well, Newmont Mining I've been tracking for actually quite a long time. There's some really interesting trend lines that it has been holding. And recently, down around December, early November and October, three tests to this particular trend line that I have drawn in. Sorry, I can't show it to you, but it's there. Anybody wants it, feel free to email me and I'll send you a screenshot of it. But since September, it's been, again, in a range. And now it's breaking out to the upside from these last tests. We have a nice long candle from a few days ago to the upside. The RSI on the test where price came lower held really well in the bullish zone. It looks like it's challenging the last peaks on that RSI. So there's a good example of what I'm talking about, those peaks from November and October. The RSI looks like it's poised to move above those. And if price has a strong move, watch that next pullback, because if they're both holding in a bullish position, it might give a good buy entry.
Yeah, there's a gap over there from June around 68 bucks, and that might be a draw too.
It sure is. And it is right at 618 retracement. So that's what I mean by kind of combining those fib retracements with something else. So that's a really great example, that gap that you pointed out.
All right. Well, we got a few minutes to go. Leslie, why don't you start out a little bit reminding people what you're doing at the company, and if you have any special offers, this would be a great time to extend them.
I do. I teach, as I mentioned, I teach traders. I've been teaching for a long time. I teach on different levels. I do still do some one-on-one training, but I now have a lot of what, my knowledge on video courses, but I'm going to offer a special on one that I actually did in 2009, because I think it's a classic. 2009 had a lot of volatility to it. A lot of traders didn't know how to trade those markets. And so this is, if you go to my website, Trading Live Online, and you go find the courses, it is the self-study course. And as I mentioned, it was a three-day seminar that I recorded. It was done in 2009. I think we're headed for some volatility. So I think it would be a good course. It'll teach you the patterns. It's going to teach you a lot of things about how to evaluate your own trading. And I think so many traders don't know how to evaluate their own trading. If you can learn how to evaluate your own trading, you're going to find out where you make those little errors that are costing you a lot of money. And so it's the self-study. If you could scroll down, you can go to training or scroll to the training programs, right? And then click right there, the self-study one there. So I'm offering $100 off of that course. It's generally $349, but you have to email me for the link. You can't get it from that sign up. So just email me with self-study course in the subject line, and I'll be happy to email you the link back and help you get set up with it.
Sounds great. Okay, Wiz, you always got a lot on the docket. What do you got going for people so they can get more information from you?
Yeah, absolutely. I just threw the link in the chat box there for our solo Amazon, if you're interested. It's really interesting because I've really moved to just trading kind of one name. I have a couple other names in my portfolio, but one of the biggest problems that most retail traders have is they're too diversified, right? A famous wise investor once said that diversification is for people who don't know what they're doing. So, you know, mainly the people who've told us since day one of investing to diversify were Boiler Room, you know, Gordon Gekko, churn, trade. You know, we want the little ladies in tennis shoes and like nine different names every other day of the week, right? For commissions. And people who come back to me and like, well, I traded a commission-free broker. I'm like, you ain't the customer. If you're not paying anything, you're the product. But anyway, so I've really, we have a service call. It's only 97 bucks a month. I'm going out in Fort Lauderdale tonight. Probably a bottle of wine's going to be more than that. So for 30 days, 97 bucks. We trade Amazon mainly in this portfolio, but since Amazon ain't super cheap, we also do a little bit of I have a buddy who said shrimp are just a vehicle for eating cocktails. Off, right? So the XLY, we also trade the XLY, which is kind of a vehicle for eating some Amazon. It's, you know, $200 ETF, but you also get a lot of Tesla. The number one and number two names in that ETF are the Tesla and Amazon in XLY. So in a solo Amazon weekly brief, we do a live brief, and then I send out some email and text alerts. So if you want to find out for what we're doing here, go Tesla us for a month for only 97 bucks, man. Sure. And that's what I got.
Absolutely. Great. And Option Professor does have a webinar tomorrow, option learning webinar. So if you'd like to go to that, just go to optionprofessor.com, and we'll be covering everything from buying them to writing them to trading them and repairing them and everything else. So I've been doing this for decades, and you can go to that meeting by going to optionprofessor.com. Hey, Leslie and Wiz, absolutely a fantastic hour, and it's always a pleasure to be with you guys. I hope we can do it again soon. It's been too long, Wiz, on that one, that's for sure. Huh?
You got it. Great seeing you again, Leslie. Great working with you. And you both and everybody else have a great new year.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
You too. Thank you. Enjoyed it very much.
Okay, guys, back to David now, and have a great new year.
Thanks. You too. Happy New Year, everyone.
All right. Thanks. Yeah, a lot of good info today. So just a quick reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube, on YouTube and your favorite podcast app. Also, if you just go to timingresearch.com, this will come the archive as soon as I can get it updated today. And you can also find any of the past shows or events here as well. And I just want to thank my guests for today, Matt Buckley of TopGunOptions.com, Leslie Jufoss of TradingLiveOnline.com, and the Option Professor of OptionProfessor.com. Thanks, everyone.